Hello and welcome to Brainstorm, a show exploring new ideas and insights about Ireland and the world. My name is Áine Kerr. Today we're going to take a look at the development of drones, from toys to weapons of war, from flying camera platforms to how the emergency services can use them, and ask if we'll soon become used to skies with the sight and sound of large and small remotely piloted devices. Joining me are Professor Tim McCarthy, who is the Principal Investigator at the National Centre for Geocomputation at Maynooth University, and also Dr. Stephanie Keogh, who's the DecaMap Project Manager, also at Maynooth University. And DecaMap is a project that has been examining the use of drones for emergency responses. But more about all of that later. Now, Tim, to start us off, let's start first with a definition of what drones actually are.
Okay, sure. So drones are UAS, unmanned aircraft systems, three components: the UAV itself, which is the unmanned aircraft vehicle, which is the actual physical platform. We have the ground station, the GS, which the operator has. It's like a remote controller, if you like. And then the third piece are the communications between the actual drone, UAV, and the controller down on the ground. And they're delivered with 2.4 gigahertz C2 command and control line, and also a data link to allow video from the drone to be broadcast down to the ground station.
They've changed a lot over the years in terms of design, but also the users. When did they start to get popular?
Okay, so like I guess to go back to the start, we would have been perhaps some of us conversing with model aircraft and model aircraft clubs. They generally flew fixed wing aircraft. Then we moved, I guess, in the 1990s, the 2000s. What you see here is a confluence of technologies, emerging technologies such as GNSS, which is Global Navigation Satellite Systems, essentially SatNav. We also had advances in communications. We had materials, composite materials coming out for airframes, battery technology. But some of the really important advances were in MEMS, microelectromechanical systems, which deal with the to make these different units compact, flight controllers, and also the payload systems in terms of optical sensor systems. These all came together probably, you know, in coming up to the 2010 mark, and you saw these new VTOL, vertical takeoff and landing drones coming out. The important bit here is the how these were made compact, how they were actually higher performance, and the price point, because that's critical here. If you have this technology but it costs tens of thousands of euros or hundreds of thousands of euros, it won't actually take off. But the price point was coming down to the thousands of euros, and that was 2010.
Okay, and so all of that means with increased sophistication, more accessibility because of the price point you talk about, creates therefore the need for regulations, of course. Maybe this is a good time for us to hear from Enda Walsh, who is the manager of UAS division, which means unmanned aircraft systems, that Tim has just mentioned. And Enda is from the Irish Aviation Authority. And we're going to hear from him now about the regulations for operating drones in Ireland.
First thing to remember is that if you have a drone that is over 250 grams, or if it has a camera, now the exception to that will be toy drones. These are small drones sold in the likes of Smiths that are only really suitable for indoor. So if it's over 250 grams or has a camera, you're obliged to register as a UAS operator. So you can do that if you go into IA.ie, we'll direct you to our registration system. And then separately to that, there is remote pilot training. Now, that differs depending on the size of the drone and the complexity of the operation. So in the recreational, should we say, there's open category, it's the lower risk, is A1, A2, and A3. You could break that down into A1, flying over people, A2, close to people, and A3, away. And the remote pilot requirements increase as the risk of the operation increases. And the regulation makes no distinction between commercial or recreational use. You're all flying aircraft, everyone's an operator. There's nearly 9,000 operators registered in the state currently, and almost 24,000 remote pilots. In terms of the number of physical drones, we wouldn't have a number on that. The state is about to appoint a market surveillance authority for drones, which would be looking at the imported drones and if they're CE marked should they be, are they correctly CE marked, etc. And that will help us gain a greater understanding of the amount of physical drones in the country. But we do have about 9,000 operators, and that is growing rapidly.
So 9,000 operators, 24,000 remote pilots, increased popularity, more regulations. But what of public sentiment, Tim? How is this playing out in the public consciousness now when it comes to safety, noise, privacy and issues such as that in our societies?
This is a really key point, Seonia. And of course, it's where you mix these technology advancements with society. And what we see, of course, is especially where you've got high volume in terms of drone movements, and you mix those with higher densely populated areas like towns and cities, it causes a problem. You don't really get a problem when you have a drone in the middle of the country. You do get a problem when you've got a lot of drones kind of buzzing around a neighbourhood.
A public meeting in West Dublin has heard calls to regulate the use of drones by private businesses. The event was organised by a recently formed group called Drone Action Dublin 15.
So even when you're indoors, you can hear them. Whatever it is about the noise, there's some kind of, there's a tone to it, or there's some kind of frequency that it omits. You can hear it quite far off.
They say they employ over 50 people in Blanchardstown and support 47 local retailers, and that their drones help cut traffic, emissions, delivery van congestion and make roads safe and cleaner.
So there's a couple of things that we got to keep an eye on there. Remember too that Ireland probably in a lot of respects usually follows the crowd on this one. This is the first time we've had different operations going on, still ongoing across the Ireland, where we've got dense or not dense, but we've got high volumes of drone movements such as deliveries in Dublin and so on. And we generally follow the crowd. And in Europe, we're probably one of the first that have this sort of operation ongoing. So there's a couple of things that we've got to look at here. First off, there are gaps in how the current regulations have been drafted and also implemented. I'll give you a simple example. Noise, for example. It is still unclear who exactly is responsible when you have noisy drones buzzing around the neighbourhood. You will have the aviation authorities on one side, you'll have the local authorities on another, and you'll have sometimes very cross folks on the ground that don't like it. Uncertainty is a thing that has to be addressed. So that bigger question needs to be addressed for sure.
And with mention of problems and uncertainties and highly populated, dense areas, that brings us to airports. And we know there's a safety and security issue, particularly when it comes to airports.
Confusion at four airports in Denmark last night when drones appeared in their airspace. Flights were grounded. And the investigation into who was in control of that drone, that is ongoing right now. CBS News correspondent Chanel Call, she's been following the story for us. And Chanel, what else have we learned as of this morning?
So, Muga, we know that those drone sightings began at around 10 p.m. Wednesday and ended at around 1 a.m. on Thursday. Now, the country's defense minister is calling this a, quote, hybrid attack. And the reason he's calling it that...
And we're going to go back to Enda Walsh of the Irish Aviation Authority on what pilots should know and how airports can deal with drones that are flown too close to their operations.
So before anyone puts their drone up in the sky, you are required to look at the airspace restrictions. So for drones, we call these UAS geographical zones. And these restrictions could be put in place for safety around the airports, for example, security. So we'd have a number around certain prisons. They can also be put in place for environmental and privacy reasons. So they may be established for nesting areas, for example. So there is, if you get an ia.ie/drones, you will see a chart there on all the airspace restrictions. But there's also a digital file that operators are required to download and upload onto their drones. So those restrictions appear on their controller. They can be put up for temporary periods or they can go with short notice. So the regulatory requirement is before every flight, you recheck where you're flying and is there a restriction in that area, because they can change. For example, if there was a state visit, there might be security restrictions put in place there. I mentioned birds nesting areas, they vary throughout the year. So these can change. There's a number that are established permanently, but we do establish restrictions on a temporary basis as well. So before every flight, ensure you check where you're flying and are there any restrictions in that area. All airports in the state are required to have counter US plans in place. Now, that can range from simply stopping flights in and out until the threat has disappeared, all the way up to having integrated detection and neutralization capabilities and coordination between ATC, Airport Services, and AGS. The counter US plan will obviously be proportional to the criticality of the infrastructure in place there. So without going into specifics of certain airports, some of the counter US plans there would include neutralization capability. So that can be, examples of that might be signal jamming to block the GPS or to lock the drone in place and cause it to land. You might see some airports internationally utilize nets or even birds of prey could be used to neutralize drones also. There's a variety of capabilities. And without speaking to the specifics, some of that will be in play in Ireland as well.
Tim, given that we have seen so many airports targeted in Europe in the past, talk of drone walls now at EU level. We know Germany is betting on Sky Ranger anti-aircraft tanks. Apparently, they've 19 of them booked for delivery by 2027. Are there workable solutions there when you listen to the Irish Aviation Authority and look across the landscape of what can potentially work?
Yes, for sure. And this is, in fact, a challenge, a problem, not just for Ireland, but for wider Europe. And of course, Enda may have mentioned different technologies that are used to actually detect these drones that are knowingly or unknowingly flown and close to sensitive infrastructures, not just airports, by the way. It could be a prison, it could be another sensitive infrastructure. So those are radar systems, optical systems, acoustic, RF sniffing, where they detect that C2, that command and control link that I mentioned before, and they actually triangulate into it and then try to neutralize it. From a national point of view, absolutely, we need to be able to monitor our airspace comprehensively. And as I understand it, there is a plan to participate in that European initiative.
Do you think the guidance, the regulations, is clear enough to people about the height that they can actually use their drones, whether it is in the privacy of their home, out in the garden, when we look at the visualizations? Because presumably sometimes this is accidental, with some people just not knowing the rules of engagement. Is there a gap?
For sure. And I would probably leave all regulatory aspects to our colleagues in Irish Aviation Authority. But for sure, look, mistakes are made. What you do want to do is ensure you've got a reasonable education campaign, and anywhere drones are sold, that it's clearly kind of pointed out what the responsibilities might be for the person purchasing the drone, and to quickly try and address that. Can I just mention one thing here too? Just it deals with drones that are 250 grams and or carry a camera. They have to register with Irish Aviation Authority, and they are recently mandated to if you like, broadcast a fingerprint, a digital fingerprint. It's like a little number plate. There are issues in how that works, because currently you need an app on your phone to detect those drones, but drones can pop up and disappear very, very quickly. So there's a bit of a job of work to be done there in trying to keep an eye on that.
Dr. Stephanie Keogh, we're going to come to DECAMAP now in a moment. But first, anything there in that scene set from Tim that struck you as new, different, or a lot of head nodding? You agree with everything there?
Yeah, I think as part of another project that we're working on, the Drone Innovation Partnership Project, that's funded by Research Ireland through LIRO, we're working in with the Irish Aviation Authority, with Dublin City Council as well. And we're really trying to get a handle on what is the airspace over Dublin. How can we handle more drones? Can we get a handle also on the current numbers? And so we have, a short sub project, let's say, within that to look at the number of drones in Dublin airspace. And actually looking at that information, we have found there is broad, agreement that there is, people are flying within the correct altitude within the right geozone. So we are getting very good data from that, that we can feed back to the Irish Aviation Authority. And what that helps us to see is, well, where they are maybe operating outside of the authorised heights, well, actually we can be able to maybe tailor some of that information at those particular locations, perhaps tourist locations, for example, just again, that education piece and getting that to the people on the ground.
So then specifically DECAMAP, tell us a little bit about it, how you're working in it specifically on emergency responses. This is very collaborative with a lot of state agencies and you're trying to basically do real-time intelligence.
That's right. So the DECAMAP project came out of Research Ireland. They had a Defence Forces Innovation Challenge in 2022. And really what that was about, it was how can Research Ireland help, you know, enable and expedite the development of Irish technology to support some of the needs of the Irish Defence Forces in their day-to-day tasks. And I guess the challenge that we really tried to solve, and Tim as principal investigator, was the call about improving the efficiency and the efficacy of actually helicopter wildfire fighting. And so just to put that in context, within the Irish Air Corps, their helicopters that are used to collect and drop water, that's actually one of their most high-risk tasks that they have to undertake. So if you can imagine, they're taking on a huge weight in a rapid time frame. And they often have to do these water drops. They can be up to 100 times in a day. So it's high risk. It's exhausting for the crews. So they wanted us to try and address that challenge and say, well, how can drone technology support them? And how can we pull together some of those stakeholders to really try and address this problem? And so that's where DECAMAP came about, where we were able to kind of look within Maynooth University, within, you know, our kind of collective expertise in the Department of Computer Science, in the National Centre for Geocomputation. We had colleagues within the Electronic Engineering Department. And so it was really about trying to bring that interdisciplinary team together and use that interdisciplinarity as our kind of really strength, if you like.
And so if I'm the end user, I'm in the Irish Air Corps or the Civil Defence Forces or Wicklow Fire Services, Caolte, whatever it might be. So this is going to help me be faster and hopefully more precise. What do I have in my hand? What's the piece of software? Just describe it to us.
So this is an AI-enabled digital platform. And what that means is all of those stakeholders that you've mentioned would have a login to a digital platform that, whether it's on a tablet out in the field, whether it's at HQ, whether it's in Baldonnell, whether it's in the Wicklow Fire Service HQ, they have this common operational picture. So that's a one-stop shop for all of these data streams, including drone imagery and drone video. And really what we tried to address was, if you've got minutes and minutes of drone footage, what are the salient, what are the really important pieces of information within that video stream or within that panorama, and deliver that back to that end user so that they can make a decision and say, well, we've detected something in a video frame. DECAMAP actually now allows you to put that detection back onto the map. And why that's important is, well, where do we deploy our fire crew, our fire engines, our fire appliances? How do we get to those people on the ground, for example? And also being able to support the air crews in the helicopters. They've got that really much better situational awareness before they even get to a wildfire, for example. So they've got that real time, but also those really salient kind of pieces of information at their fingertips, and everyone's singing off the same hymn sheet.
And so in the ideal scenario of, you know, all your use cases there, they should be able to deploy helicopters. This is going to mean safety of people. Hopefully you're able to extract people. Your Bambi buckets that you're describing there earlier, it's really precise targeting. So this is lives, this is wildfire, this is people, homes that if used in the correct way, in that moment, you're paring back minutes.
Absolutely. And you're trying to ultimately suppress the wildfire, and you're also trying to reduce the extent, because as you said, there's societal issues there. There's loss of communities, homes. There's also those environmental pieces, loss of species and habitats, like in the Killarney National Park example from a number of years ago. And then there's the economic side of it. So the cost to suppress it. So you're trying to address all of those things by getting the decision makers the information in the most in the shortest time frame.
And if it works in Ireland, which clearly it does, and you've all of your use cases now and partnerships, is this something that is scalable? Can it be used in other countries?
Absolutely. And that's really what DecaMap is about. It's that scalability piece. It's using that digital technology that can be scaled to other European users. In fact, earlier this year, we partook in a European exercise called MODEX. And these are like, this is a European task force that actually come to each member state and assess our readiness and our ability to deploy both human resources and those physical resources. But DecaMap were invited in really to showcase the technological resources that Irish responders have at their fingertips.
My name is Trevor Hunt and I'm a sub-officer with Dublin Fire Brigade. Drones are used by Dublin Fire Brigade to enhance both its awareness of risk at a site prior to any event happening and a response to an incident at that site if it were to happen. The main benefit for fire services is the simple capability of having an eye in the sky. It gives the incident commander a fuller picture of what is happening at the incident and also allows them to make better, safer and more effective decisions on the ground.
Presumably, if it works in the emergency response, it could work then for what? Traffic, congestion, accidents. Mm-hmm. This could be playable and usable in lots of other scenarios.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, we had great support from Research Ireland through that commercial, through the Defence Forces Innovation Fund. And now more recently, we've been supported by Enterprise Ireland with a commercialisation fund to bring that to the next level, to really try and commercialise these technologies and bring it to new sectors where we think, well, actually, we think we can deliver benefit to users, whether it's outdoor events, for example, it could be critical infrastructure, linear infrastructure, for example. So really, that's the phase that we're in now. It's very exciting. We're getting good traction. We're getting good feedback. We're in that phase for the next 12 to 18 months.
It's a great example of technology for good, technology that can be really helpful, all of which means the public may have to get used to more drones in their skies. And Alan O'Reilly, who's better known by his online profile, Carlo Weather, he's been using drones for aerial landscape photography for many years now, but finds some people are still a little bit suspicious when they see one up in the sky, especially in rural areas.
Primarily, I use my drones to capture scenes of landscape. So a lot of the time will be around sunrise and sunset. So a colourful sunrise or sunset is kind of my main thing. And then it's really about trying to show different, you know, views through the seasons and through different weather. So obviously snowy scenes as well, but also, you know, just trying to capture nice landscape around Carlo. I do a lot to try and promote Carlo. And I think when you get, you know, the photography and the videography of the drone, it gives you a different view than most people see. So really it's just for capturing, you know, different landscape at different times of the year, showing different seasons and different weather. It's funny, I've had every kind of reaction to flying the drone, but certainly in the last few years, people have become more nervous around them. And, you know, I generally fly them out in the countryside, and I've had every reaction, really. I've had farmers threaten to shoot them down. I've had people contacting me, driving up to me, asking me why I'm flying over their house. I'm lucky in that once I tell them I'm using it for Carlo Weather, most people know what Carlo Weather is, and then they change immediately to, oh, that's great, and why are you taking pictures of? And, you know, they're very friendly once they realise that you're just taking photographs of the landscape. But there's definitely a nervousness around people seeing drones and noise. The other thing is when you do fly them sometimes where there is people, young people are really interested in them. Lots of, you know, young people will come up looking to see the screen, to see what you can see on it. So it's a very mixed reaction, but certainly in the last couple of years, there's a lot more nervousness around people seeing drones flying over them.
Oh, it's the future of delivery. They've been training us for months. I need you to place an official order on Amazon to activate the drone.
Nuts. We only got one shot at this. Are you sure you can get it here?
Don't worry. I fly like a bird. I can soar like an eagle with this thing.
Hey, Mark, protect that sweet baby drone.
Tim, history teaches us that technology often evolves faster during war or conflict or during moments of big human endeavours, big calls to action like the space race. Is that what we're seeing at the moment? How fast are these developments in drone technology moving, and presumably moving faster than the speed of regulations to try and keep up with the speed of innovation?
Yes, Sionia. So what we've seen, if we go back to what we started with at 2010, that was kind of like the entry point for drones. If we look at them now, there are different legislative pieces coming out of or that have come out of Europe, the 2019 945, 947 dealing with drones and drones operation. But more recently, the 2021 664 on use base. And you might say, what's that all about? Exactly as you point out, we're now moving from one person flying a drone to taking the human out of the loop, and we're looking at machines controlling machines and moving to traffic management systems where you've got multi-operator, multi-application drones operating in close proximity automatically. That requires the technologies for sure. The legislation is there. But do you know what's still missing? That bit of a join, trying to have that communication piece to wider society, and also with the technology and the legislation, there are still gaps as to how that is actually rolled out. And I'll give you a very simple example. With U-Space or the traffic management systems, let's take a scenario. You've got drones A, B and C. A and B are coming into conflict and they will release a advisory to both those drone operators to deconflict. So drone A will go up, drone B will go down. But now what happens is because it's not centralised, drone C comes along, is now in conflict with drone B. I know that sounds a bit kind of topsy-turvy, but the point being that that whole transaction has yet to be kind of figured out exactly how it should be rolled out, and that needs to be in place. So that's an example of the legislation pieces are there, the technology is there, but that organizational operational piece is still missing to a small extent.
Keep your futuristic hat on, Tim. When we imagine the future of drones, where maybe it will be the human out of the loop and machines managing machines, where do you think this could evolve to in terms of data? Will we see air taxis? How much more sophisticated can this get in terms of solving maybe everyday conveniences, some of the emergency responses that Stephanie talked about? How big can it get?
I think the drones will have an increasing role to play when we look forward to the next decade or two. You're right, information gathering, that's quite important. Logistics in terms of packages and cargo. Also specialist services like search and rescue, that's a specialist task, and we need robots in the air to give us a hand to figure out what's going on. The fourth bit, I guess, deals with kind of air taxi. So, you know, I arrive at Dublin Airport, rather than getting a 40-minute cab to Lucan or something like that, I can get there in 8 or 9 minutes by air taxi. So what we're seeing and what will continue are advanced aerial mobility, AAM, and urban air mobility, which covers off on those two ends.
Stephanie, with your futuristic hat on, are you optimistic about the potential here?
Absolutely. And again, through our projects and stakeholders, there is actually an appetite for this, you know, even at a local authority level, being able to use drones to undertake tasks that would typically be high risk, maybe building inspections, for example. Using this for good, for society, for the benefit of the taxpayer as well. How can we drive efficiencies using drone technology? And again, that whole concept of drones as the first responder. And so, you know, working in with the Dublin Fire Brigade as well has been great, being able to understand how can drones deliver, you know, again, going back to that really important information, that location, that accuracy, you know, to better serve society.
OK, well, on that optimistic note from both of you, Professor Tim McCarthy and Dr. Stephanie Keogh, Brainstorm is produced by Kieran O'Byrne. The sound engineer was Niall Monagle. Brainstorm is edited by Jim Carroll and Aoife Ryan Christensen. With thanks to Taiga Erin, Research Ireland. And for more, go to rte.ie/brainstorm.